This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and for each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan to come on and talk about Voyager. On this episode, my guest is Jeff Gamet. Hey, Jeff, welcome to Voyager Revisited.
Jean, I am so excited to be here with you. And not just because I enjoy Star Trek, but because it's always great to get to talk with you.
Likewise, I am very excited to talk with you too. It's been a long time actually since we've done anything talking or podcasting together, and so we have a bit of fun for ourselves today to talk about Star Trek and Voyager, and today's focus topic, which is Tom Paris, and we'll get to him in a bit, but let's hear some more about you first.
All right, well, first off, we've known each other forever, which I think is awesome.
Yes.
And at one point, a little over a year ago now, mm-hmm. I feel like my world kind of came around full circle to you again, because I now work for the company that you used to work for, because I'm the text expander evangelist. And my first introduction to Text Expander came from you.
Of course. In fact, I think Text Expander was acquired by Smile Software the same year that you and I met. So I still remember all my Text Expander facts. And I could pitch Text Expander all over again to you today. That's a different podcast.
That's a totally different show.
But yes, I'm really glad that you get to work with all the nice people at Smile, a company that I worked for almost 10 years and really, really love them.
They're awesome people, and you're awesome too. So like I said, I'm really happy to be here with you.
So Jeff, besides being an evangelist for the world's favorite text substitution software, what I really want to know about is, like, how long have you been watching Star Trek?
I've been watching Star Trek since I was a young kid, and so I would have been in elementary school, so maybe like first or second grade is when mm-hmm. when I really noticed Star Trek. And the mm-hmm. that first episode that I saw, so at that point it would have been the original series. And mm-hmm. it was the episode where I just forgot the name of it, but it's the one where they have to go through the Avatar back in time to a different point in a planet's past to avoid being killed by the planet's impending destruction. And yeah. So Captain Kirk ends up in this kind of Victorian world that or time period where they believe in witches and magic, and I just remember the scene where Captain Kirk finds the place where he can get back through the portal to the library, and mm-hmm. you watch his hand kind of dissolve through the brick wall. Mm-hmm. And as a young kid who had never seen anything like that before, I mean, I was already blown away by they went through this doorway and changed colors and disappeared, and now they're in a new place. But watching Captain Kirk's hand go through the wall, it was like this pivotal moment in my life where I knew I needed to know more about what I was watching. And I've just been hooked ever since.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I wish I could remember which episode I saw first. I don't remember that. But I do remember seeing many, many original series episodes when they came out, because I was just old enough, you know, I was in like first, second grade when they first came out. And according to my father, we bought a color TV so we could watch Star Trek.
That's awesome.
I know, it's hard to imagine that TVs were not in color. That it's not that long ago, people.
No, it's really not.
But yeah, I just liked everything about the show. You know, it had me, you know, on the edge of my seat as a kid. You know, everything was new and things were risky, and you never knew what was going to happen next. And I really loved Mr. Spock. I mean, just loved him so much.
See, I went back and forth between thinking Spock was the coolest and Dr. McCoy was the coolest. But then sometimes Mr. Scott was the coolest.
Yeah, there's a lot to choose from. And yes, I really enjoyed. I think also I just liked the fact that they were a crew that was like a family, and they all had their jobs to do, and everybody worked together most of the time. And just seeing that kind of TV family that they became, that was also something that I liked.
Yes. So. And another thing for me out of the original Star Trek series that was really important, and I didn't realize it at the time, but it taught me that everyone is equal.
Right.
I was exposed to Star Trek. So when I started watching, it was in syndication as reruns. Mm-hmm. And it never occurred to me that it was weird. And at the time, unfortunately, it was a weird thing to have someone like Lieutenant Uhura. I mean, what a pivotal and critical character for the time. And and so I didn't see women as a little kid as anything different from men as far as equality. And it didn't occur to me that there were these racial tensions that people were having to address all the time, because I saw this very mixed group of people that were all working together as the command team for this mm-hmm. starship, and that became a core part of my whole life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Star Trek, and you know, right now as we record this, we have a lot of. I don't know. It's a difficult and challenging time as the country and the world have to deal with a virus that is infecting people everywhere. That I have noticed more people turning to Star Trek saying, you know, they're going to watch some Star Trek because there is something about that vision of the future where countries and peoples and planets, you know, can get along and work together. And that's a comforting notion that we would like to see in reality.
I agree that the notion that there's a future where things are better, and not just like we survived, but it's a better place. That's an image that we all need right now.
Yeah. You know, to move along to Voyager, that is, for me, again, another time when Star Trek picked up the baton and said, we're going to push it a little further, and had not only a woman captain, but a Native American first officer and a black Vulcan as basically third in charge. Mm-hmm. So no white guys in any of those positions, which were in the original series, all white guys. So. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's interesting to me to throw it back to the original series a little bit. We had three white guys for the main roles, but when the series was originally conceived, one of those three white guys was supposed to be a woman.
I know.
But it was also a product of its time. And the fact that they were able to do what they did was remarkable.
Yeah.
But then with Voyager taking it to where they did, where it was the first time there was a woman captain outside of a very tiny little clip in Star Trek Voyage Home?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, it was tiny. It was not memorable, so I can't remember.
And so having Janeway, to me, that was a really important thing. And it felt to me not like, oh, wow, they have a woman as a captain of a starship. My reaction was, holy crap, how did it take so long to get to this point?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 30 years basically from the original. And even then it was a big deal, and it was, I don't know, just it took a while for people to understand that Janeway was not the woman captain. She was the captain. Mm-hmm. And thankfully they had Kate Mulgrew, who, you know, you do not want to cross her.
She was so perfect for that role.
Uh-huh. And so she was the captain, and there was, she brought a different sensibility, and the character had a different sensibility than captains before. And, you know, yes, she was probably more compassionate in some ways, but she was also colder in some ways as well. Mm-hmm. I think this episode in particular, yes, that we're going to talk about is one of those episodes that shows you do not cross Captain Janeway. She is not going to be happy. But yeah, it's funny, we're talking about all these great characters that they brought, you know, new representation to the crew. But our focus today is the white guy, Tom Paris. He's the first member of the crew, in a sense, from the audience's point of view, because the premiere of Voyager basically starts with Janeway recruiting Paris out of
jail,
a penal colony. Mm-hmm. And the Paris of episode one and two is not the Paris that is here in season five, episode nine, 30 days. But it takes him five seasons to get to that point, I would say. Mm-hmm. But as I said when I asked you to come on to this podcast, I really would like to do an episode about Tom Paris, because we have covered close to all of the other characters. And I wouldn't say Tom Paris is my favorite character, because, you know, there's so many other great characters to choose from. He has been my crush since I first started watching Voyager. And I've always thought, like, yep, I would be one of those ensigns who find him charming and get sort of, you know, swept off my feet by his good looks and his charm. So... Yes, I want to do a Tom Paris episode, but you, of course, can have your own opinion about the character.
Well, Tom does not sweep me off my feet, mm-hmm. but he's also not my type. But that said, I really like the character. And what I like about the character was that it was a departure from your typical Star Trek main cast character, and certainly a big departure from what you expect from the bridge crew characters. Mm-hmm. Because he's not a black and white character. I mean, he is a good guy, but he's also a bad guy, and he's a very flawed character, and he's made a lot of bad life choices. He has a tendency to be self-destructive, and this is just a great mix to put together into that character, and then throw that character into a very critical role on the starship. And it sets up so many things that you can do with the character. And actually, my big disappointment is that they didn't do a lot of the stuff they could have with a character to show that inner turmoil and to show the growth, and I'll use the term redemption of the character. Mm-hmm. But we get some of that in 30 days. So, yeah. You know, it's on one hand, it's kind of a shallow episode, but on the other hand, it does give us this character study into Tom Paris that we don't get anywhere else in the series.
That's true. It definitely shows a side of him that helps us better understand where his conflict with his father, the Admiral, where that comes from and why it's still very fresh.
He needs dad's validation.
He needs dad's validation, exactly. This episode, 30 Days, it's also an interestingly structured episode compared to your average episode where things kind of happen in linear fashion. This shows us the end at the beginning, which is Paris losing his rank and a pip and being sentenced to 30 days solitary confinement in the brig. And just in that first like minute where Janeway pulls the pip off of his collar, I'm like, I don't ever want to cross her. She is
Seriously.
mad.
Yeah.
This is a definitely the episode of angry Janeway.
If this were the Expanse, she would have spaced him.
Yeah, she almost you could argue she almost did.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they show him, in solitary confinement, and I mean, nobody would do really well in solitary confinement, except maybe Tuvok, but Tom Paris is definitely, he's bored and he doesn't have a lot, going on inside to keep him occupied. So they show him doing push-ups, and I do love that he skips the push-ups from like 3 to 98 when Neelix comes in. And
Which is very much a Paris thing.
exactly, he's taking a shortcut and not being totally honest with another person. But at the same time, he's there. So with Neelix there, he's getting food, which he's not very excited about. And I mean, nobody's excited about Leola Root Stew,
Clearly.
I think, in any time. But even Neelix can't hang out and chit chat with Tom because they're under the captain's orders not to have any unnecessary conversation. And this is Tom's, state now is that he wishes that Neelix would hang out and talk with him, and he can't.
And I felt like, and I might just be projecting, because Neelix is a pretty shrewd character. But I felt like Neelix, when he comes in and Tom goes 98, 99, 100, and Neelix says, you're staying in shape or working out, whatever he said. To me, that was Neelix acknowledging to Tom that he knew he didn't do 100 push-ups, and that at the same time he wasn't going to just directly call him out on it, but he knew.
I mean, he is the morale officer after all. He's supposed to have a little insight into how people are doing. But yeah, one thing that Neelix does bring though is one of the pads, those little iPad things that they carry around with them because they don't have, a wired internet system in
And
the,
apparently they don't have Big Chief tablets either.
I know. So that gives Tom something to do. It's basically the 21st, well, not the 21st century. We would give somebody an iPad maybe, but before there were iPads, give somebody a notebook and a pen so that they can at least write things down. And Tom gets to dictate a letter to his father.
Which is a nice setup for being able to tell the story. And but then it also gives us that piece of information that we need to know about Tom, which is that despite the problems that he has with his father, he still needs his dad's validation.
I think that it is interesting that that's the first thing he thinks of doing, as opposed to writing letters to his girlfriend.
Right.
He could have letters that could have been delivered. So I assume, I don't know. But yeah, this, but that's not the story. The story is he's telling his father what happened, that landed him in the brig. And it's, you know, it's not what you think, he says, because of course we know he's been in jail before for, you know, for bad behavior. And this time he wants to explain himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that they can manage a Captain Proton segment into this, because Captain Proton is the essential Tom Paris, like glimpse into his mindset, that he's created a holodeck program that is a black and white superhero program from, I would say, like the 30s or 40s.
Right. Yep.
And it very much like an old Captain Marvel or whatever.
Yeah, it feels like a cross between Captain Marvel and Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon.
Yeah, so they have Captain Proton and his sidekick, Buster. Oh, Buster. What's Buster's last name?
It's funny because I only remember Buster. And
yeah.
And I didn't even realize that Buster had a last name.
Yeah, Buster, who is, of course, the long-suffering Harry Kim,
mm-hmm.
who has, he's the best friend ever because he continues to play Captain Proton and Buster with him. You know, this has been going on for a while.
And we finally get to meet the Delaney sisters.
I know. I was like, is that really them? It's the Delaney sisters. And yes, they have Harry Kim tied up. And I mean, it's corny and a goof, but it just made me laugh how they were saying, we've got your Buster right here, and we're going to torture him. He'll be our puppet. He'll be our slave.
And Harry is clearly very excited about this prospect.
But then Tom, as Captain Proton, you know, comes in with his ray gun or whatever, and he's like, and Harry's like, I've got everything under control.
It's all fine here. Don't you need to go back to Space Command or wherever? Don't you need to go any place other than here?
Yeah. Yeah. It is it's a short, snippet of Captain Proton, but it's one of the best because, as you say, we get to meet the Delaney sisters, who we probably haven't heard anything about them since season one.
And we get to find out about Harry's bondage fetish.
Yes. But they get called away to come to the bridge because I thought this was funny, actually. It didn't seem like all bridge crew assemble.
Because they just found a planet.
They found a planet. It's a cool planet, but it doesn't seem like something you would call people out of whatever they were doing. And so they find a planet that is only ocean.
Right. And I have to get a little bit nerdy about the ocean for a minute from a Trek fan standpoint.
Okay.
So this is the first time we've ever seen a water world in the Star Trek series.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in and of itself is kind of cool. But we have that shot of Voyager coming in low above the ocean,
yes,
and the waves are rolling. And just that shot is so wonderful. And then to take into consideration when this episode was made. So this would have been 90. I don't remember the year, but so it was in
it'd be like 99 or 2000 probably.
Oh, okay. So anyhow, when it was filmed, the CG technology that we had at the time was certainly not what we have today. So to have that level of an effect, a CG effect in a TV episode, was unheard of. And I think the water effects were just amazing. Absolutely loved them. Now, of course, we can do better today, but in the lens of when this was made, holy crap, that was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the initial shot of the planet where you could see the waves, I thought, well, you don't see the waves of an ocean from outer space like that. It should have really disappeared as like a blue sphere, I think. But when, as you say, when they get down closer, they really have that beautiful shot. And I was surprised they went in so low, honestly. I thought they don't even know what's here, and they're flying down so low. And sure enough, some spaceships, or they say, or they submarines, what are they, come out to defend the planet, as you would expect. And anyway, it's very cool, and I happen to be one of the fans, the few, but I am a fan of Waterworld, the movie. So I just enjoy seeing that that planet like that. And except that this planet, it doesn't have a core. I mean, it's just water. That's what they find out, you know, as they start to learn. They invite the people on board to have a tour. I always like how they give tours of the spaceship, of Voyager, when if they meet nice aliens.
Yeah, they'll invite anyone on. Here, come to our most critical parts of the ship, and we'll just show you everything.
Yeah. So, but yes, I talked to the I forget what they're called, the Moreans,
Minean.
Moneans, Moneans.
The
Yes.
Monean Maritime Sovereignty. Now,
Yes.
and just so you don't think that this is the sort of data that I keep in my mind all the time, of course I rewatched the episode before we recorded,
Yeah.
and since I could not remember who they were when they announced who they were, I wrote that down so I could remember Monean Maritime Sovereignty.
Yeah, I remember that because I was thinking, why are they called maritime? Their whole planet is an ocean. Like, they don't need to distinguish between maritime and
Right,
land.
and it's not even their planet originally. They
Right.
were trying to find a planet to live on, so that they weren't actually a water species. It just so happens they found this place, and it worked out for them.
Yeah. And they do say, though, so there's, you know, there's two of these or three of these Moneans come up aboard, and there's one who's like clearly the scientist guy, and he says, well, we do have a problem though. Our ocean volume is decreasing, and we want to go to the center, but it's so far down that we don't have any ships who can do that. And but when he says that we have a problem, and Janeway says, well, we'll do whatever we can, I thought, no, you won't. Like, that's not the prime directive. You gotta, first of all, hear what it is, and second of all, you know, I thought she was pretty keen to say she'd help them, but then Tom said, like, oh yeah, we could take the Delta Flyer, and or we can Voyager can go down there. And that's, you know, Tom has been super excited ever since the people came aboard and ever since he saw the planet. So that's what we learn, is that Tom has been, you know, a Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea fan since he was a little kid, and he wanted to join the Navy, we do find
I
out.
have to nitpick this point
Yeah.
because when Tom is telling Janeway about this whole love of the ocean and love of the romantic idea of being a sailor, this is so out of the blue. It's like when we have one episode where Chakotay is suddenly all into boxing, and it's like, where
Yeah.
did that come from? And that's what this feels like to me. But at the same time, I get why they did it, because they needed to show this passion that Tom has. I think they could have done it just as well by saying that Tom's love of ancient technology, that just fits in with that. I mean, he loves cars and he loves cartoons and he loves television. And he could just as easily have that same passion about ships out on the ocean.
Yes, I think you are absolutely right about that, that it feels patched on to the story so that they can make it into a passion that we never knew about
right
until now. Like, he never restored a boat. He never even built a boat.
Right. We've never seen any maritime trinkets in his quarters. Right. I mean, we have had no indication that, I mean, this is his, I'm a boxing fan moment. It just didn't fit. And it's actually an ongoing complaint that I have with Voyager. Whenever they need to contrive a passion like that, they just suddenly bolted onto a character. And it's just always bothered me. At the same time, I absolutely love the series. Yeah. I have watched every episode more than once. And just love it. But that's just one of those little things that bugs me.
Yeah. Bolting on things to stories and characters is not unheard of in the Star Trek, throughout all the Star Trek series.
Yes, this is true. Maybe it just feels less graceful to me in Voyager.
Yes, it might. I think maybe it could. And they have to do it more often because their stories can't use a lot of the things that other series use that are kind of permanent part of the background.
That's really true. Yes.
But anyway, we're glad that Tom wants to do this because we all want to see the Delta Flyer go 600,000 kilometers below the surface.
Yes. And the effects are wonderful for that too.
Yeah.
You know, when they do the dive down and it's the Manian scientist and it's Tom Paris and it's Harry Kim and it's 7 of 9.
Yes.
To me, that was interesting because there's this running thing through the series where a lot of the one-liners that are delivered straight and they're coming from Tom. And in this episode, they're coming from Seven.
Yes. Yeah, she's pretty funny. Plus, I mean, you have to be grateful that they sent one grown up on this trip.
Right. Yes, because it's all the kids. And so 7 of 9 is the babysitter.
She's yes. But she goes along with what they want to do because it's her nature.
I love that line. You know, everyone votes on should we continue our deep mission, even though some sea serpent just bit our ship. And Seven says, it's in my nature to comply with the collective. What a wonderfully funny line.
That was really good. Yeah. So they get down there and they find there's some kind of, they say it's a field reactor. There's some kind of.
Yeah, like a gravitational field reactor, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Harry says it must be at least 100,000 years old, which means something has created this ocean planet. And before the Manians had ever showed up, you know, relatively recently, 300 years ago. And that, you know, as they get closer to it, something, there's the eel, which is, it, or whatever it is, it's a big, scary underwater thing with big teeth and also electric.
Yeah,
and
it's so, totally a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea adventure.
Exactly. It's exactly right.
Which they address at one point, and I like that they totally acknowledged what they were doing.
But at some point, they have a breach, and water is coming in, and I thought, you can't have a little leak like this at this depth if you have a leak, your whole thing is pulverized. Right. You know, there's no no shielding. There's no nothing. If water's coming in, then there's no reason that the whole...
The ship should have been crushed and they should have all been
It
dead.
Should have been crushed right then. So that did bug me. Also, Tom fixing the leak looked dangerous the way he was doing that. I don't know, just the water and an electrical charge together, but it's the 24th century, so...
So it worked.
Maybe it's different.
I have another problem with this episode because of what they found. And my problem is that they had this wonderful missed opportunity. So they have a throwaway line earlier on before they do the dive where they're finding out how the Manians came to the planet and what they know about it. And so we find out that there's this religious belief that their god or gods or whatever supreme entity that they believe in had put this water planet there for them. So we have this whole theological undertone right there. And then they find out that some other race 100,000 years ago created this gravitational field generator thing to hold this ball of water together in space. There's nothing that they do that addresses how does that fit with their religious beliefs. What a wonderful opportunity for a really interesting story, and they didn't go there. Now, granted, I totally get that this episode was supposed to be a Tom Paris character study, and if they did that, it wouldn't be a Tom Paris character study. But I would have loved to have seen that episode, too.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting threads that could have been teased out of this water planet thing. Like, it does feel like we get the nickel tour of the planet, which is, there's some, like, buildings, you know, those are
the buildings. How are they there? I want to know how they're anchored in place when there's nothing to anchor them to. Yeah.
I know. And in some other kind of episode, we could have seen like the interiors, you know, we could have seen more of the field generator. I would have liked to know more about that. But so they did open up a lot of cans of worms or sea snakes or whatever that we couldn't really get a good look at because they were trying to get a certain story told in a short amount of time.
Yep.
And that story was about Tom and not about the planet itself. So.
Which gives us another missed opportunity because it's an episode about Tom and you know, he's in solitary confinement for 30 days. That's a pretty radical and harsh punishment. 30 days of solitary confinement. And why do we not have anything with like Chakotay going to Janeway and saying, you know, that's actually torture. Yeah. Why is not B'Elanna flipping out? Because she's Klingon and we've seen her flip out a lot. Why isn't she flipping out that her boyfriend is being locked away for 30 days?
Yeah.
And there could have been this really interesting story, you know, counterpoint to Tom's story going on at the same time, like the pushback coming from the crew and Janeway having to dig in her heels and hold her position to really make everyone understand she is the boss and she's in command.
No, it's that's a good point. And it did seem, even in the little bits of it that we saw, it seemed pretty bad, you know, pretty bad thing to do to somebody. Although considering what he did and what they almost, you know, had to do, he got off.
Yeah, at least he didn't get killed.
He didn't get killed. I don't know if that's a great bar by which to judge punishment.
But in this case, it's the only bar we have.
So I think It got interesting to me though when they get they so they figure out what is happening is as these people, the Minoans, are pulling oxygen out of the ocean. They're making the ocean more dense, and because it's more dense, the gravitational balance has to be reset by this reactor, this 100,000-year-old reactor that seems to be able to cope with this relatively recent problem. And that's why the volume of the ocean is decreasing, because which kind of makes sense. Like, you can't take all the oxygen out of the ocean, otherwise you don't have an ocean anymore. But yeah, just another, what could have been a lot of interesting science that went with that, but it really just got laid out, boom, boom, like here's what's going wrong, and you got to do something about your mining operation, or else, the ocean is definitely going to be depleted. And this is going on at the same time as Janeway's talking to the main Monian guy, who is telling him that things are pretty bad based on their calculations. They won't have this ocean within 5 years, and he doesn't like that answer because it's not an answer he can sell to his people, to his political allies. And that hit home a little bit right now because it's like, oh, you're not going to listen to the scientist, you're going to listen to the politician.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things that I really liked about this episode, even though they couldn't explore that much deeper than they did. But I just loved that the real problem here was bureaucracy. And getting to see that addressed, and I mean, it wasn't head on, but it was nearly head on, because you have this guy that has to go back and report to his government. And what he has to report, he knows they won't be receptive to, and will in fact probably ruin his career. And here's a guy that probably has a family and an apartment somewhere, because that just seems like a reasonable assumption to make in this case. And he doesn't want to lose his job.
That's right. And Janeway even calls him out and says, are you more concerned about what's happening to the people, or about, your political career? Which there's no answer to that, so he has an answer. But yeah, so they found out this thing that you think would make them go, oh, we'll fix it, we'll fix that right now, probably with Voyager herself.
Yeah, they totally give them the perfect answer. Like it's a throwaway solution that we have seen in other episodes, but they don't accept the throwaway solution, which I like that they don't accept it, because they're so worried about the politics, about the bureaucracy, about not losing their jobs. I would have liked to have seen that played up more, but the fact that they put that in there to me is just wonderful. I love that that's in the episode. And it also triggers Tom.
Yes, it does. And Tom is Janeway, actually, she gets mad at him when they're discussing this because he's speaking out of turn, and he's challenging the Monians, whether they really will do something about it. And I like Janeway in this episode where she says, like, when you're in a room with me, you put that, you leave that at the door, those emotions. I'm not against strong emotions, but when you're in here with me, you leave that at the door. And he does the thing that was completely predictable and takes the Minoan scientists down, back down to the planet in the Delta Flyer to put some oxygen mining facilities out of commission, so that at least they slow that down and maybe they'll be rebuilt in a better way, like with B'Elanna's plans, which she just whipped up for them. So So they go, there's some good stuff there again. Like they needed to go back underwater. Like I was thinking they had this whole water thing set up and they needed to go down there one more time. And they had to have an underwater like dogfight of, you know, the Minaeans, their ships coming after them and shooting at them. Cause we needed to see that. And, Janeway can't reach Tom, or he's turned off the comms, yeah. And he's just going to do it. He's just not listening, and she's really, really mad, like capital M A D mad, that he has totally gone against what she told him, and he's disobeyed a direct order. And Harry is like, but I mean, it's Tom. We're not going to fire on Tom.
And Janeway's like, yeah, we are.
Yes, we will. He gave up that that right to be considered part of this crew when he took the Delta Flyer. And I was surprised by the twist at the end, or not the very end, but how that resolved itself. Because I thought they did not, you know, I couldn't remember. I thought they must blow out the mining things because that's what's going to happen now. And of course, they're not going to be killed.
Right. Because you have to have a happy ending.
Yeah. But then Tuvok's in on it. And it's definitely a moment of like, you're not smarter than Tuvok. So don't try to fool him by hiding your ship for a little bit. He's going to figure out where you're going. Tuvok's going to figure out what the trajectory of your missile is and take out the missile, not the ship.
Mm-hmm.
That's what surprised. Were you surprised? I didn't remember it.
Yeah, I was surprised because my initial thought was that, you know, watching the episode, my initial thought was that it's going to be this incredibly contrived series of things that come together to make the underwater photon torpedo just miss the Delta Flyer, and the way everything plays out, then the Delta Flyer is able to disable the oxygen reclamation system, but no one gets hurt, and then the Minaeans are like, well, now that we're here, we can actually rebuild this in a better way, and we'll all be better people for this, and it's high fives all the way around, and that's not what we get, which I love about this episode.
It's much less of a happy ending, and it's more of a realistic ending, at least that part of it that. That Janeway gets her way, first of all, which I think is important. Mm-hmm. She's willing to go pretty far to get her way when it's a matter of Starfleet, you know, protocols and rules. But Tom doesn't get his way at the same time. He gets the opposite of that. He doesn't get to do what he'd gone down there to do, and he ends up in solitary confinement for 30 days. And it's going to be up to those people to figure out their problem and solve it, which is really the way it should be,
mm-hmm.
even if we don't agree.
Yes. I love that this isn't just Tom being a rebel to be Tom, but he has a very, very valid reason for violating the rules like he does. And the way that Robert Duncan McNeil plays the character in this episode, it comes across to me that Tom Paris is aware of what the repercussions of his actions are going to be, but because he feels so strongly that he's doing the right thing, he's willing to make that sacrifice. And then in mm-hmm. the end, his sacrifice is for vain because he loses his rank. His reputation is tarnished. He goes into this incredibly cruel solitary confinement for 30 days. And the Minaeans are not making any changes. So they're 5 years away from losing their whole planet. And he's just sitting in solitary confinement as they move on to the Alpha Quadrant. And I love that they ended it with the messy ending and not the typical, here's the package with a bow and everything's wrapped up nicely and everyone's happy.
Right. There's no like, oh, and by the way, you know, at the end of the 30 days, we found out that the Minians, you know, redid their whole mining system. So it's better, you know, it's just no, we don't know. And it's not up to us. So, I mean, Star Trek all the time goes in and fixes a problem, knowing a culture for, you know, a matter of days. Mm-hmm. it's not that Star Trek never does that, but Voyager tends to, you know, tie things up pretty neatly. And this was a little bit messy. On the other hand, he still has a girlfriend. And I think that's the most important part of the story for for Voyager fans going on for two more seasons after this.
Well, if Tom and B'Elanna weren't still together after this, it would have made a lot of other episodes later on a lot more difficult.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love the B'Elanna paging him in his quarters saying, rumor has it, you'll be free for dinner tonight. And he's trying to maybe weasel out of it or say, maybe you don't want to be seen with somebody like me. And she's like, my quarters, 0700 hours. That's an order, Ensign. And so it's a good B'Elanna line.
It's a good B'Elanna line. And also shows that she's on graveyard shift at the time because she wants to do dinner, but at 7 a.m.
Right.
It's little things like that I pick up that are worthless details, and yet my mind is full of them.
Yep. And then he finishes his letter to his dad, just says, like, I hope this letter helps you understand me a little better, and has it saved to his hard drive or whatever. saved and delivered when we get in, you know, range of the Alpha Quadrant or whatever. So
the fact that he finishes the letter is symbolic.
Yes.
Because, well, I mean, the whole thing is that the whole episode is showing that Tom has grown and become a new person, and he's better than who he was in Caretaker. And I like that they did that. And having the closure of finishing the letter to his dad. I mean, they gave us the setup for that in kind of a ham-fisted way because Harry tells him, you know, hey, you need to finish the letter, and Harry is clearly the physical manifestation of Tom's conscience in this episode. But he finishes it, and that's in an important point in the evolution and growth of Tom Paris.
Yeah, that's right. And he, as Harry said, you know, you're known for not finishing things, and he couldn't finish his mission, his Captain Proton mission on the planet, on the water planet. But he could at least finish that dang letter.
Mm-hmm.
So good for you, Tom. I'm glad I rewatched this episode. It's been a while. It's not one I think of going to. I think probably because of the things we talked about, that there's certain, you know, unsatisfying quality to all the cool and juicy stuff that they dig up that they don't really get to go into.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a really good episode, I think. And I especially did like and felt intimidated by Janeway of this episode.
Yeah. And I'm glad that we picked this episode because it's been a long time since I've seen it. And watching it, there were so many things that made me happy to be watching it again. You know, like getting to experience this manifestation of Tom's growth as a person, getting to see Janeway as the cold, just here's what I have to do to maintain the order on the ship, captain, And being reminded that Kate Mulgrew played that character so well because she was the captain, and it was clear she was the captain. But at the same time, she wasn't this automaton with long hair. She was a woman also, and it's nice to see these different sides of these characters fleshed out a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thanks, Jeff, for watching this episode with me and talking about it. I really enjoyed catching up on some Star Trek with you.
This was so much fun. And thank you, like, really, thank you for inviting me on, because this has just been so great getting to totally nerd out with you on Star Trek, and especially Voyager.
Yes. And thanks to the listeners as well for being here. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. Follow us on Twitter and on micro.blog at Voyager_cast. I will be back in a couple of weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. But until then, time's up.